Good morning.
Well, good morning, Faye. How are you?
I'm wonderful. It's a beautiful day in Midland, Texas.
It is a beautiful day. It's Easter weekend, and it looks like it's actually going to be nice, because for a while there, we were talking that, hey, Easter may end up being winter coats and blizzard-like weather, and then last week was nice, and it looks like this coming week is nice. It looks like the whole weekend is going to be beautiful. And so, yes, it's perfect springtime Easter weekend weather.
And that's what we want. The flowers are all blooming, you know that?
Yeah.
The bluebonnets are all on the highway. And Indian paintbrushes this year, have you noticed them?
No.
I saw fields of Indian paintbrushes this week that were gorgeous. I mean, just everywhere you looked, they were orange. Oh, they were pretty. And then, as I said, I saw the bluebonnets. So everything, all the flowers are in prime time this week.
Wow, how pretty.
So. And that's great for Easter also.
Yes.
And I can't wait to see all the little kids in their dresses and little bonnets. Nowadays, a few of them will have on bonnets, not all of them.
Yeah.
Times are changing.
Yeah, times are changing.
Yeah, this new modern world, I don't know about it, you know? Oh, my gosh.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be a glorious weekend at the Bagby House.
It will be. The bunny rabbit, we've talked to him. He's coming this weekend. He's going to lay eggs for us. He's going to do all kinds of things.
Oh, that's going to be so much fun. You'll take lots of pictures, and it's going to be just going to be a grand old time.
Can you imagine when my grandchildren get grown and they no longer have the Easter bunny coming? What a day that'll be.
I don't think that's ever going to happen.
It may not, because we have so much fun things going on at my house.
Yeah, you
that,
do.
We celebrate everything, you know? Oh, my gosh.
Well, you should. And so that's just great.
It is great. And, Paw Patrol, you know how famous this thing is?
Uh-huh.
It's coming to Prestonwood Church next weekend.
Really?
All the Paw Patrol characters will be at church.
Wow. That's unexpected. That's
unexpected. Can you imagine? Every child within 100 miles will be at Prestonwood Church next Sunday. There isn't any doubt about that. They are so popular. Dogs are coming to church.
Goodness gracious. Once the word gets out there, there'll be a line up around the block, maybe two blocks, just to get in.
There will be, and any parent that doesn't bring their children to church that Sunday, they'll be in deep trouble.
Yeah, you got no excuse at that point.
No, you have to be there for this and to take pictures. Oh, my gosh, this will go on for probably a couple of hours.
Oh, I have no doubt. That's going to be a huge event.
It will be, and then the next Sunday, they're having the Monster Truck Show at the church.
Are you serious?
I am dead serious. The monster trucks are coming back.
Well, I have never heard of that at a church.
Oh, yeah, they came last year.
Really?
I was there with the kids again.
Wow.
I mean, they were getting in and out of those huge trucks. They were letting them do all this stuff in the front. I mean, these kids, were in and out of some of the hugest things I've ever seen.
Wow. That's amazing. They do some really cool events over there.
They do some magnificent events at Prestonwood Church. You remember what they did at Christmas with all the camels going down to the front of the church?
Yes.
And then they had the zebra went down there. We still don't know where that zebra came from. and the donkey. And then they had those angels flying.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is the church that's in the know.
Well, you talk about times are changing. Goodness gracious, I remember when we were kids, that would have never happened.
It would have never happened when I was a kid.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just the straight old deal.
Yeah.
You know, you go to church, you wear your best bib and tucker, and that's it. You know. But now we still have Sunday sunrise service, and all the churches will have, three or four services tomorrow. Because it will be high holy days, because Easter in the Christian world is probably the biggest holiday other than Christmas.
I would say you're probably right, yeah.
Because everybody wants to be in church or at sunrise service for this Sunday. It's that important.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's you know, there's certain days of the year when people who don't normally go to church, well, they'll get up, they'll put on their Sunday best, and they'll go out. I think Christmas is one, and I believe you're right, Easter is the other one. So, yeah, I would expect a lot of people.
Oh, yeah, I mean, that's why they're having so many extra services. They expect so many people, and I don't know how many worldwide, but they said, you know, this year, especially after the Notre Dame fire, that people in France have found their faith again.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, and I hate to say it, but sometimes it takes something like that to jar people back in and realize, oh, wait a minute, these are our priorities. Let's get them back in order. And so, yeah, I think this, of all the Easters that we can remember in recent years, I would say this is probably going to be the biggest one.
That's what I'm thinking also, because it brought everybody back to mind what is really important and what is not important, and this is really an important step, you know, for everybody that they should be taking. And I think it woke a lot of people up around the world about their priorities.
Yeah, yeah, I think you're right. We could use a little of that right now.
I think we could use a lot of that right now. And so I think it's really... It helped us a lot in the Christian faith. I think it has.
Yeah, yeah.
It'll restore a lot of people's faith and remind them that they are Christians and there's things Christians ought to do.
Yeah.
So I think that might have been really a wake-up call.
Yeah, yeah, and things could have been much worse. And so, you know, we got a wake-up call relatively with you know, because it really could have been much worse. There could have been lots of loss of life. There could have been, you know, it could have happened the day before when the church was packed. I mean, who knows? It could have been a whole lot worse. And so to get out of it the way that they did, now obviously there's a lot of damage and a lot of money being raised and a lot of plans to move forward, but you know, still to come out of it the way that they did is probably a wonderful thing. It's a blessing in disguise, I guess.
I think it is too. And of course, remember this thing, the cathedral was 2,000 years old and the lumber was very, very old inside that it was really made up of.
Yeah, yeah.
But they said they saved the cross. They saved a lot of the really important artifacts were not burned.
Yeah, yeah. It's miraculous. You know, when they had the pictures from inside, stained glass was preserved. The magnificent organ was preserved. A lot of those artifacts,
oh, yes,
like you said, yeah, they were taking them out while firefighters were fighting the fire. It's really a miraculous story inside of something that on the outside looked so tragic. To see the people that came together to do what they could to save as much as they did is really wonderful.
Yeah, I think it is too. So I think even though it was tragic, I think it was a good thing.
Yeah.
As far as a wake-up call, and they will rebuild it, and they said it would take 5 years, and they've already raised, I think, right at $1 billion,
yeah,
to restore it.
It's been a lot. It's been a magnificent outpouring of people. So hopefully this will be a happy Easter for people literally around the world.
That's what I'm thinking. I think it will make it, like you say, it'll probably be the biggest Easter there's been in many, many a year.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to be great.
It will be.
Well, anyway, we better give out the phone number.
Yes, this is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage. And you know, and I know that Ivy Cottage has everything every woman wants. I mean, there is. Especially Faye Bagby. Oh,
they ought to call it the Faye Bagby store, is what they need to do. They need to rename it.
That's right. They need to rename it and say, well, Faye, we're just going to put a door in from your office over to ours, and you can just slip in here anytime.
There you go. You should suggest that if you haven't already.
That's right. I guarantee there's not anything over there that I don't think is wonderful. I guarantee you that.
Yeah, we all know how much you love it. Now, this is all about growing your wealth so that you can retire early if you want to, if the option is there. If you don't want to, that's fine. If you want to go ahead and retire, that's fine too, but you have to have the option. You have to grow your money. You have to get in a position where you're able to do it. Now, the thing is that when people are looking at the stock market, and this is the traditional way that most people go. They get out of college, we'll say. They start, in the job force. And then after playing around and wasting a lot of money and learning a lot of lessons the hard way, racking up maybe some credit card debt, going out and buying a whole lot of toys. Finally, they get a little bit older. They start to settle down. It seems like, though, by the time people start to settle down, get to that age where they think about retirement, I hear from a lot of people that they say, well, geez, I should have done it when I was 25 or 30, but I was busy playing at that time, wasting all kinds of money. And now that I'm a little bit older, it's too close to retirement, and I've blown the whole thing. So what do you say to that type of person who has that mindset?
Well, I think they have to change their mindset, because if they're 45, 55, 60 years old, they need to be getting ready for retirement. And I have more people all the time that want to retire early. I don't know how hard they must have worked at these companies. I had people in this week that said, we're 59 and 60. Faye, we're tired. We've been working 40 years for this company. And they said, we just want to retire early. They say, can we? Do we have enough money? And if we put it with you and have enough interest, can we retire? And I said, yes, you can make it work. So people are considering that right now, of retiring early. They're looking at what they've got and what I can make them, and saying, can we make the numbers work? Can we live off the interest? And they can.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people are saying, we need to come and do this. We've procrastinated so doggone long that now's the time to do it. And I believe that's right.
Yeah.
And, the big difference between our investments and the stock market is you know what you're going to make going in. And for anybody wanting to retire, that's really important. You need to know what you're going to make on your investments. Instead of worrying about it and saying, we have to get up at night at 12 o'clock and check our investments, which they all do. If you know what you're going to make, you can relax, because you know you're going to get that much money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's comforting knowing that it's coming, and all you have to do is just wait.
That's exactly right. It's just invest and wait, and then when it comes due, we reinvest again, because almost all of this is IRA money. This is money they've moved from their 401k into an IRA with us. So when they do it, they know each investment. If it's a 24-month policy, they know they're going to make 24%. That's just the way it works. They know it's 1% a month. And it's in the contract, and not only is it in the contract, they know that it's a life insurance company they're investing in. And I would think a life insurance policy is pretty safe, because you know what you're going to get. You know the life insurance company is going to pay off. They always have, and they pay off fairly quick. So it's the type of investment you can sit back and just say, okay, when it comes to, Faye will send me an email.
Yeah, exactly. And let's face it. For the most part, people are lazy. We want to do as little as possible and make as much as possible. And so I literally can't think of anything that fits those requirements any more than this. You take your $100,000, because that's your minimum. You take that. You go over. You see you've got some life insurance policies that people have sold. You've bought them. We'll get into those types here in just a minute. But you've got these life insurance policies. They put say $100,000 with you into a policy. They literally wait. It works exactly like you said. You just wait for the policy to expire. You're going to send out an email and say, hey, we're putting $25,000 or $24,000 in your account in the next 7 days. It's literally that easy, right?
It's that easy. It takes about 6 weeks usually to get the certified death certificate, get it over to the carrier, and then the carrier pays very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Usually within 2 weeks after the life insurance company gets it, they pay off. And, that one the other day paid off quicker than any we'd ever had.
Yeah.
And but mostly it takes 6 to 8 weeks to get the check back, get it in to you know, Nevada Trust, and them to get it in your account. And, you know, they put it in your account within 24 hours.
That's fast.
So that's pretty quick.
Yeah.
It is. And they have a deal with their bank that the bank will, you know, give us credit for it within 24 hours. And that's pretty good.
You know, and I've never asked you this before, but during that, say, 6 weeks period, when people know, they get the email, hey, this policy has matured, it's going to go into your account in the next 6 weeks or so, what are people doing in that time period? Are they anxious? Are they excited? Are they ready to get in the next policy? Are they not doing
anything?
Yes,
well, the first thing they do is send us an email and say, thank you. You know, we're glad that it was matured. We'll be looking forward to reinvesting. And then when the money gets there, they say, okay, can you get me in a policy? That's always the first thing. Can you get me in a new policy? Then we're telling them what's available, what we can put them in. Mm-hmm. So it is a waiting game, but they know that the money's coming, and they're already ready to get in something else. They're already sending emails saying, you know, can you put me in another policy?
Yeah, it's that exciting. You know, it seems like one of those things where, you know, once people go through the first one, and I know you have tons of people who have been with you for years and years and years, and they've done, you know, God knows how many of these things, and it's as ordinary to them as getting up in the morning and putting on their socks. But for the new investor that comes in and they get in that first policy, I would imagine that's probably super thrilling, because I'm sure they're used to, you know, worrying, wondering, that anxious feeling, the anxiety that goes with it, the oh my goodness, are we going to have to start all over, you know, if 20 years of investing got wiped out tomorrow in the stock market, could we recover in time for retirement? I would imagine that after that first policy, people are super relaxed, super excited, and that's the goal, is to not just get into one policy. The ultimate goal, I would assume, is that you're diversified. You're in a number of policies so that while one matures, you're rolling over into a new one. While that one matures, you're rolling into another one. That's basically how this works, right? It's in ebbs and flows.
That's exactly right. So, you know, we try to keep them fully invested, where they will have more money for retirement. And if you're not fully invested, you don't have that as much income as you think, because you've got to have that interest income to live on. And that's what they're all trying to do, is build up their interest where they can live on the interest and not get into their principal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it's supposed to work.
And that's how the whole plan works. Like you say, it's a strategy. It's a long-term strategy that happens over several years in order to get ready. Now, for people that think, well, geez, you know, I don't have several years. I don't have 5 years or 10 years, or I should have started, I know, 15, 20 years ago, but I didn't. So all is lost. For that person who's, let's just say, 50 or 55 years old, just as a rough example here, somebody who's 50 or 55, is it too late for them to get started?
No, it's a perfect time. 55, you've got 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can do a lot in 10 years. You know, I mean, they're not really that late, because you need, naturally, you need to get started. But 55 is a good time to start. You've got 10 years, or if you plan to retire early, you've got 5 years to get, you know, the interest going. And then you're going to want interest to keep going even after you retire. So 55 is a good time. It's not too late.
So let's work the numbers backwards a little bit. You know, if you say 50 or 55 is a good age to start, somebody who may be listening right now is, say, 45 or maybe in their low 40s. That means that they have 10 to 15 years extra time to make some more bonus money. And so you do the math and you start thinking, well, my goodness, if I can make enough to retire in 5 or 10 years, what could I do with 15 or 20? I mean, it's really exciting to see how much money people can make and how short amount of time it takes to do it. You've got to be diversified. You've got to be in a number of policies. I know there's a number of factors. You never claim, though, that this is going to be something that happens overnight, regardless of the plan that people are on. Regardless of how much time they have to retire, they've got to put in the years in order to make this happen. So this is not an overnight thing.
No, they're never going to get rich overnight. And it takes time. It takes several years. And they have to be diversified. You've got to have not one policy. You need 5 or 6.
Mm-hmm.
You need enough where that you've got some coming in early, some on time, and some late. And you just take a third, a third, a third, or a half and a half, whichever way you want to do it, and say, okay, I know this many are going to come in early, so that's going to help me a lot. These are going to come in on time. I'm going to have two that are going to go over. So you never know. But if you're prepared and you do this and you're diversified, it'll always work.
Do you find that people who first come to you and they talk about retirement and they say, you know, Faye, I've thought about it. I haven't really run a whole lot of numbers. I think I have a general idea of where I want to be. Are they thinking only to retirement date, or when they first come to you, are they thinking, oh, we not only need to get to retirement, but after retirement, while we are traveling, while we are doing these other things, how are we going to make money? Are they thinking that far?
Well, lots of times they just think about up to retirement. They don't realize we can handle it even after retirement. Mm-hmm. So even though they're not ready to retire, then I explain to them, even after you retire, we'll keep the account open, we'll keep the interest going, but we will, the day you retire, we're going to have to put some cash in there for you to live on. You know, you're going to need like 2 years cash right then to start toward their retirement, and then you put cash in all the time after they retire. But you need to put 2 years cash in their account on retirement date.
So there's a number of accessible accounts that people can get to money, and it's doing a number of things. One, they've got, like you say, the account where they've got that 2 years of money that they can use, and they can use that to live on, buy groceries, travel, buy whatever they're going to do. And then there's another, and I know we always put this in simple terms, like we call them piles. There's another pile where you're taking funds from to keep reinvesting, and so when people are investing, it's not, I think the thing I'm trying to stress here is that once people get to retirement, they no longer have that paycheck. They still have money that you're working with. One, they can access to live on, and there's a separate deal where they can still invest. So just because they retired doesn't mean they have to reduce their lifestyle. It still means that you just got this all planned out so that they're still making money and still have money.
That's exactly right, because you're going to need money no matter what. And like I told some people this week, okay, when you come to me, you should have your house paid off if you're 60 years old. Now, if you're younger, we don't expect your house to be paid for. We expect to just have a good income and a good 401k. But when people come to me and they're 60, I say, okay, now your house is paid for, everything's paid for, and if you had to retire today, how much money would you need? And we talk about that. You know, is it $60,000? Is it $100,000? Is it $200,000 a year? Depends on your lifestyle. What have you been living on now, and you're going to want to do it the same way? You're going to want to always have as much income as you had before.
Do people have an unrealistic outlook on retirement? And it could go either way, because obviously the goal is to maintain where they are now. But do some people have the attitude of, well, geez, you know, we have all this money, and so let's just go crazy and wild and do all these crazy things? Or on the other side, do you find that people get a little bit more conservative, you know, out of not necessarily fear, but, you know, knowing that, hey, we need to kind of scale back to make sure we don't run out? Do you find either of those to be true?
I've never heard anybody say, let's scale back. I mean, you're living in a different world. They do not say that. Nobody says that. We're going to scale back. You're living in a dream world. Their expectations are always the highest. We can take this much out a year, we'll still be okay. You know? That's what they do. Instead of $60,000, they're going to spend $90,000 a year.
Yeah.
You know, that's what happens. Because they've never retired before. Remember that. If you've never retired before, you don't know how to act to start with. You're so giddy at the fact that you've retired. You know, you want to travel. You want to have fun. You want to take the grandchildren places. And people, the first 2 years are going to overspend.
Uh-huh.
Then they're going to settle down and probably just take what they really want to live on locally. They're not thinking of big trips after the first 2 years.
So that is
first
normal.
First 2 years, it is trips. Oh, yeah, it is normal. But they never say, let's cut down. That's not in their vocabulary.
Okay, because I have heard some people before that weren't ready, and they started in the planning process. They started with that mentality, and I know this is an over exaggeration, but they have that mentality of, well, instead of having steak 5 nights a week, let's scale back to ramen noodles, and then that way, you know, we can have what we need.
That might have happened if they were retiring in the 50s and 60s. Yes,
yeah,
they'd be very, very conservative. But remember, this is 2019. People are not that conservative.
Yeah,
they want to live the good life, and they want to go and if they want to buy a ranch after retirement, all kinds of things. Let me tell you something. I have a client that not long ago, he got bored after he retired. He went and bought a ranch. I mean, that's how they think nowadays. Oh, I can go buy a ranch. I can buy a farm.
Wow.
I've got one that bought a farm. One's bought a ranch. They're living the good life, let me put it to you that way.
Wow. Yeah, like you say, I've never retired. I had no idea people were getting bored buying ranches.
You didn't know they did all that, did you?
No.
Well, they do.
I mean,
once they retire, money means nothing to them. I mean, it should, but it doesn't.
Well, good. Well, now I know what to expect. I know it's okay to go out and go crazy and wild. So when somebody comes to you for the first time and they're trying to do this planning, I assume that you've got that overspending kind of in the back of your mind for when you plan for how much they're going to have ready to go at all times. You've kind of got that little cushion in there for the first couple of years, right?
We have to have a cushion in there. And also, these are clients that have a lot of money going. I mean, you know, we've already made them a lot of money. One of these clients, I'd made them $800,000 in the last 5 years.
Holy smokes!
Yes, they have made $800,000 in 5 years. So they could afford the ranch, but I never thought they would do it. Let's put it this way. First, they bought the lake home, you know, big lake home. And I thought, well, this will keep them busy, you know, remodeling, getting out on their boat, doing all this. But they got bored, and men get bored. You know, this retirement sounds so good, but a lot of them get bored, and they need something else to do. So all of a sudden, they buy a ranch. And, you know, a ranch is going to keep you pretty dadgum busy with a lot of cows on it. But it gets them away from the wife for the day. too much togetherness when you retire is not a good thing. Some people can handle it, some can't. And some say, well, I just need to get away. So they don't buy the ranch in this county. They buy it several hundred miles away where they have to go down there and spend the night, the weekend, and a week. You get it? Yes. Uh-huh. Get them away from everybody. And that's what they have in mind.
Wow.
So, yes, a lot of people do a little overspending the second year, especially. The second year, they're getting kind of bored. And they've been traveling. They're tired of that. They say, oh, what I need is a ranch. And you go, oh, my gosh, that's really what they need. Oh, my gosh. So that's just what it is.
To get to that point, though, you've got to be ready. You've got to have all your debt paid off. You can't go into it with loans and credit card debt and payments on the house.
No.
Pay all that stuff off. And so get all that done. Most people, I would assume, just pay for cash anyway. So you don't, I would assume, have a whole lot of people in that situation anyway when they come see you, right?
No. Everybody at 60, their homes are usually paid for, or they owe maybe $20,000 and they've just left it on the books, you know, as a write-off. Mm-hmm. But most of them could turn around and write a check any day for that last little payment that they may owe on their home. But most of them, their homes are paid for. Some of them already have a lake home. The ones who don't, usually that's another thing they do. They buy a lake house to get away. And people that I've talked to do not want to retire right here in Midland. They've lived here all their life. They want a new beginning. They want to live somewhere else. And all of them that I know of have chosen a lake home. They've bought on a golf course and a lake. And that's what they intend to do. So it tells you what their lifestyle is going to be.
Yeah.
And they want water. They want trees, a golf course. They want a boat. And those are things they're going to allow in their retirement. That boat is going to come right up, the lake house. So you have to be prepared for all this. You got to put it in their budget, you know. You've got to make enough money to have a lake house, a boat, and not in Midland, Texas.
So you got to get started. To get there, and that's really, you always say this, this is the biggest hurdle is just getting started, because men do tend to procrastinate. We put things off. You know, we want to go have fun. We want to go buy the bike now. We want to go buy the truck. We want to go, you know, play. We want to go, you know, do as many fun things as we can. And a lot of people stereotypically think that planning for retirement is not a fun thing, but you're making money by doing nothing. And so that is a fun thing. And so that's what this is really all about. And your phone number is?
Phone number is 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And never forget that we're right next to Ivy Cottage.
Of course. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby, and every Saturday morning around this time, we get into trivia, whether we're talking about some holiday or some place to go or a bucket list or trivia. So what's the topic this morning?
Easter. It's Easter weekend. We're going to talk about Easter. How many dollars do you think was spent on candy in 2018?
I'm going to say $500 million.
$18
billion. $18 billion with a B?
With a B. $18 billion in 2018 on Easter candy.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh. You know, it's an amazing deal. Would you think people love candy that much?
Well, I know I do, so I can see
I know you do.
I did my fair share. I know.
Oh, my gosh. Well, now let's talk about the traditions of Easter.
Okay.
First of all, you're not going to find it in biblical times.
Mm-hmm.
But the Easter egg traditions have been around a long time. And the most prominent of the Christian holiday is the Easter Bunny. Now, it was introduced to America by the German immigrants. They brought over their stories of egg-laying hare. And, of course, as I said, it's not mentioned in the Bible anywhere, but everybody believes that the long-eared, short-tailed creature who delivers these decorated eggs on Easter Sunday is a prominent symbol of Christianity's most important holiday. The rabbit was known to, as you know, as a symbol of fertility and new life.
Oh.
Uh-huh. And the Easter Bunny arrived in America in the 1700s.
Whoa.
With German immigrants in Pennsylvania. And they would make nests in which the bunny would lay the colored eggs. And then eventually it spread across the United States. And expanded, of course, the chocolate and candy and gifts, and it got, even carrots were left out for the Easter Bunny. And this is part of our Christian tradition, and they said the largest Easter egg was made over 25 feet high, weighed 8,000 pounds.
Wow, holy smokes.
They built it out of chocolate and marshmallows.
Ooh, delicious.
And it had to have a steel frame. It was so cotton-picking big. Oh, wait. And don't forget, the Easter parade started in New York City. It's still there to this day. And it goes from 37th to 57th Street. And they shut down all traffic. And they have every kind of hat, every kind of bonnet. It's been going on all these years.
Wow.
But it's been a part of a Christian holiday since the early, early days.
Mm.
And New York City's the only place I know of that we have these huge parades for Easter.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't, I don't know that I've really run across a whole lot of big parades for Easter. I know, you have the candy and the Easter Bunny and all that, but as far as the big parades and the big productions, I don't think I've ever seen them anywhere else.
And, of course, this being Holy Week, Friday was Good Friday, and everybody will have, well, most churches have sunrise service, and I think it's the most important one. It's back like it used to be. This Easter Sunday, every church will have five or six, different services. But I always think sunrise service as the sun's coming up, is the most traditional.
Yeah, it's the most symbolic, I think.
That's what I'm trying to say. It's the most symbolic of the opening of the tomb. And they also said the eggs at one time was supposed to be the rock that was opening of the tomb.
Really? I'd never heard that
before. Yeah. And so a lot of this, the settlers from Germany and all these places that came over here, although we make fun of the bunny and the eggs and everything, a lot of this was way back symbols of the Christian holiday that we don't even know anything about. And the eggs go way back, just like that Easter bunny that they all, introduced way back. And then, of course, in the 1700s, it came to America with the Germans. But the eggs also, they were at least 13th century.
Wow.
Yeah, 13th century of these eggs.
I didn't realize that went back so far.
Yeah. So we're going back 12th, 13th century with this. And, of course, the Germans is the ones that brought all this over. Remember, Europe is a lot older than us. So all these things that we take for granted came from Europe. It didn't start here, but the people, the settlers who came over, of course, brought the stories with them and about the eggs. And at one time, they used the eggs as a symbol of the rock being removed from the tomb.
This is literally the first time I've ever heard that. I literally have never heard of that before. I had no idea.
Yeah, and so the people in other countries, that was part of what they did and what they believed, is a symbol of that happening.
Yeah, and so while they've been having these traditions for hundreds and, I guess, thousands of years, to us it's relatively new because, our whole country is relatively new, relatively speaking. So, wow, it's interesting. I guess I never really spent a whole lot of time thinking about it either, and it's just never come up in any kind of conversation about where the eggs came from and the Easter Bunny and all that. This is fascinating.
Yes, it really is to know that all this goes way back in Europe, and as I say, it was part of the cherished Easter tradition.
Wow.
And it's been here for centuries. It just wasn't in America for centuries,
yeah,
like it was in these other countries. And they introduced us to the egg laying and the story of the hare in the 1700s, even though it was back to the 13th century. The decoration of the eggs and the things that they believed had to do with our Christianity.
That's amazing. And then obviously we've taken, these traditions and expanded on things and added, the chocolates and
what everybody's saying. Yes, that was not original. Yeah, they expanded chocolate and candy and gifts and a decorated basket. It all replaced those nests for the simple little nest where the bunny just laid the eggs.
Yeah,
I mean, all that was just, just laid the eggs, and that's the way it was. But Americans, we always go for what everybody has, And when they mentioned chocolate, we were all in, 100%.
They mentioned chocolate, we were all in.
That's right, we were all in. And, there's just no telling how many thousands of that little chocolate bunny are sold every year.
Oh, my
I don't know how many thousands, but 18 billion in candy total last year. 18 billion.
You walk down the candy aisle at the grocery store at Easter time, and it seems like they have more variations of the same thing. Because there's two shapes. You've got the Easter bunny or the eggs. And it's so there's only two shapes that we're talking about. But there are so many different variations of both of those. It's not like there's a Santa Claus and then a reindeer and then a Christmas tree and then some other thing. It's like Easter, literally, there's two shapes. And so how we are able to do so much with it's kind of fascinating, I guess, in all in itself.
Well, how about when they came out with the Easter peep? You know, those little yellow peeps.
Oh, my goodness.
And you know, we put those in our eggs. The little peep chicks. You know, you got to have those in your eggs.
Have you seen what they've done with those peeps? They've changed. They've added colors. They've added all kinds of things to them.
That's right. And then they have the little marshmallow deal for everybody that can't have chocolate.
Yep.
And if you can't have chocolate, you've got the little marshmallow candies that are colored, you know, pink and blue and all this. And it's just amazing what you can get in the way of candy.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
And we stuffed every egg with candy. We didn't want anyone to miss out on the candy.
Well, no, you can't. And on warm Easters, when you're out hiding plastic eggs with chocolate candy in there, you got to be careful because it can melt really quickly.
That's right. That's why you need to eat them real quick. And then don't let that melt.
Best bet is to eat it on the way home from the store is what you should probably do.
Oh, I love it. In the back seat of the car.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. I've been there and done that. Look in the back seat. These kids got this chocolate all over their face and their hands. And they got right into the chocolate while you were driving. Yes, I know about that.
Oh, yeah. You didn't even see it. And then they got it all in the leather seats and everything. It's everywhere.
Oh, yeah. And everybody has to be cleaned off and the seats have to be cleaned. I've been there and done that.
Several times, I would imagine.
Several times. And this year will be no exception. We will have every kind of candy there is known to man for Easter.
And then once we're done with the sunrise services, we're done with the Easter egg hunts and the candy, then you have Easter lunch. And everybody gets together and you know, stays in their Sunday best, and they all get together for a wonderful springtime Easter lunch.
Yes, you have to have the big Easter lunch. And somebody said the other day, well, Faye, are you cooking? I said, no, I'm going to the country club because I got too many little children, you know. So we will be at the country club for lunch, and they will have wonderful things. They'll have 50 kinds of food, and everybody can just have what they want. Then they'll have that huge dessert deal, huge, every kind of pie, every kind of cake, little tarts, everything. That a person could possibly want.
Sounds so good.
And, you know, years ago, you know, everybody went to grandmother's house, and everybody had ham, and they had turkey, and they had lamb. They had everything. But nowadays, it's just a little easier if you've got 10 or more just to go to the country club.
Yeah.
Because they do the dishes. That's what I'm interested in, the dishes.
They do the dishes. That's the important part.
They do the dishes. That's all I care about. Yeah, I don't want to do dishes.
Yeah.
And, yeah, when you figure out, you know, that they'll do the dishes, it's worth every dime.
Yeah, it is.
And every restaurant, every country club will be full on Sunday.
Oh, yeah, it's one of the biggest. It's almost as big as, I would say, probably close to Mother's Day.
Yes, I think it is, because everybody wants to show off their new dress. Everybody wants to be at church. And then they go, we've got so many people, we've got to go out to eat. And every restaurant that takes reservations is full, let me tell you.
Oh, yeah, they're already full.
Oh, yeah. They were full on Monday and Tuesday. You do know that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, everybody was searching for reservation, trying to get into places, and they were turning people down, by the way. So it was important that everybody start this a week ago.
Yeah.
And not wait till Saturday and say, oh, we don't have reservations. Well, honey, you're going to have to go cook. You've got to go to the grocery store and do the whole number, you know?
Yeah, go find you a couple hundred dollars worth of ham and turkey and whatever goes on the side, and you'll have to make your own spread now.
That's right. You've got to do your Jell-O. You're going to have to work till in the morning, let me put it that way.
Yeah, and if you do have to cook, you should probably start right now.
I think you should go to the grocery store right now, get all the ingredients, get your recipes together, and get started.
Yeah, exactly.
And, it's going to be a long day. It's going to be a long day. But I've got this thing licked. I'm not doing dishes, and I'm not cooking. And the little grandchildren and I will just have a good time. We'll sit at the table and talk and eat together and play together, and we'll have a wonderful afternoon.
And then at some point, take a nap.
And then we're going to take a nap. And we're hoping it's more than 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And we're hoping we haven't got them so hyper with all the candy that they're off the walls, you know?
Wow. Well, it sounds like you've got a wonderful Easter planned for this weekend, and so we hope you and all your guests have a wonderful holiday weekend over at the Bagby House.
I appreciate it, and the same to you.
Well, thank you so much. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby, and your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330, 877-588-3330, and we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.
So what do you tell somebody who is listening for the first time and they're saying, okay, you're talking about investing in life insurance policies. I don't understand how this works. Why is this such a wonderful, what are like three of the biggest highlights of this type of investment as opposed to some other types?
Okay, to me, the first thing is you know what you're going to make. And see, to me, that's really important. Going in, I have a fixed amount. I know what I'm going to make. It's in the contract. It's with a life insurance company. That's another big thing with me. My investment is in a life insurance policy. We know life insurance companies pay off. They're not going to discount your value. They're not going to ask you to take less. You're going to get what you have coming. I love that. I like the fact that it's handled by a bank. Nevada Trust handles the money. We never touch your money. I love that part. The checks are never made by my company. And then I like it because the bank gets a certified death certificate and pays you when the policy matures. That's all the things I love about this.
There's no dilly-dallying about it. There's no guesswork about it. It's basically, and I know this is, again, simplified, but you basically invest, you set it and forget it, you wait for the policy to mature. When it does, you get your money, you reinvest. And that's really as simple as the whole process works.
And what I like is there's no ups and downs.
Exactly.
And we talk about this all the time. The stock market is up, it's down, it's up, it's sideways. This investment is not up and down. It's just a set amount.
Mm-hmm.
So that takes some of the risk out.
Yeah.
You know, there's always risk. Don't get me wrong. There's always risk in every investment in America. But I think it has less risk because it is a life insurance policy.
Well, yeah, and with a life insurance policy, you know, one of those risks is that it could go past when they think it will mature. And so if that happens, people will have to know ahead of time that they'll have to pay those premiums. But the good thing is they, even though they may have to do that, they know ahead of time what the premiums are, so they're not hit with unexpected, you know, fees or anything like that. They know ahead of time.
That's exactly right. When we're asking them to go in a policy, I tell them what the premiums are right then. And they can make the decision. Is it too high for them? Is it just right? It's kind of like the Three Bears story, you know?
Mm-hmm.
If it's too high for you, then this is not the right one. If you can't pay $1,000 a year, it's not right for you. But ours, you know, are so small, most of them are, that it's not going to hurt you. I had one the other day. And the premium was $14 per person because the total was $1,400. If it goes over, for the whole thing, it's $1,400. So some of these have got really, really good premiums, okay?
Well, and that's one of the factors that you look at when you're deciding whether or not to bid on each policy. You know, not only, you know, are you looking at the condition of the policy holder, what kinds of cancer do they have? Obviously, stage four is just a given, because those are the only ones you work with. But, you know, what type of, is it oral cancer? Is it breast cancer? Is it, you know, where is it? Has it moved? Has it grown? Is it in remission? Is it, are the people in, you know, doing some other alternative treatment? Are they, as you say sometimes, are they on the golf course enjoying life? So you're looking at all these factors, but the amount that the premium would be if it goes over is another consideration, and we don't talk about that very often, that you're looking at that factor way ahead of time.
I have to, and when I'm bidding it, I'm saying, what is the premium on this policy? And then I figure it out. can they put $100,000 in this policy safely, and the premium won't be too much on $100,000, or do I need to back it down to $50,000? If the premium's higher, I may not let them put the $50,000 in the policy because I don't want it to be too much for them. So, you know, we give them that choice. And lots of times I'll say, okay, now this is what the premium is. Do you want me to take your investment back down to 50? And a lot of people say, no, I want to put $100,000 in. So I go with that. But we give them that option. And we're looking at the premium at all times. I'm looking about everything. I look to see that the company is A-rated. It's got to be A-rated. And like everybody says, you know, if you did B-rated, you could buy the paper cheaper. Yes, but I would be worried about it, too.
Yeah, it's a little more risky that way.
It's just a tiny bit more risky. Not a lot, but a little bit. And so we're not going to do it. I want to be sure that they always get their money back.
You know, that's a great thing. That's what makes this such an appealing investment for so many people, is that there are so many layers of not only metrics like past history that you're looking at that work for everybody because the math is there, but you're also looking at all these other factors. In fact, you're also looking at the data about the data, you know, so not only are you examining all these factors, but you're going back and looking to make sure, hey, is this still a valid point? You know, this factor that we were looking at, whatever it may be, 3 years ago or 5 years ago or even 6 months ago, does it still hold water? Do we still, you know, go after policies like this? Or does this, is this no longer working? Or is this changing in the landscape of the marketplace? You're always analyzing the data, which has got to be you've got to have people that come to you, especially for the first time, and say, Faye, this is so amazing. Not only, you know, is it conservative, but you're running the numbers. The numbers are, you've got data on data. They've got to be saying, hey, why didn't I do this years ago? Is that right?
That's exactly right. And a lot of people say, why didn't we start earlier? That's the whole thing. If we'd started earlier, look how much we would have made by now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really important.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to retire early, you've got to start early. Now, if you're going to work till 70, you know, you can start late. But a lot of people don't intend to work that late. I don't have anybody anymore that wants to work that late, except I do have some people that are working that late.
Mm-hmm.
I've got some people that really didn't hit their groove till 65. I've got some men that really started really making money at 65.
Yeah.
Which is an amazing thing. Most people started making money, you know, at 60 or 55, you know, way back there, but a lot of people didn't.
Yeah.
But now that the oil boom is here, a lot of people are making a lot of money, and now they're investing it with me and saying, you know, I want to get out of the market. I want to get it a little more secure.
Yeah, we've got, excuse me, we've got end-of-the-year bonuses. We have signing bonuses. We have wages. I mean, there's so much money. It's just, you know, it takes a somewhat of a disciplined person to go ahead and be responsible with it. Yeah, go ahead and, you know, play around. You do some, you know, toy buy-in. You know, get you a new truck. Do whatever you got to do. But take some of that, because there is so much to work with here. Take some of that. And invest in something that's going to give you a better future. I mean, why wouldn't anybody? I guess we always say, if your money isn't making money, then your money isn't making money. You're just kind of like
you're backing up. You're backing up if you're not making money.
Exactly.
You're going backwards.
Exactly.
And we all want to make money. I mean, a smart person has their money invested at all times where they can make money. I don't know of anybody that doesn't need to make money, do you?
I've never heard of anybody that said, hey, I got enough, I'm out.
That's right. I've never heard of that. I've never known anyone that had that much money.
Yeah.
Because everyone does need to make money.
And this program is ideal for a whole group of people. And to do the life settlement, you've got to be accredited. And so that means the qualifications are...
You must make individually $200,000 a year. That includes your bonuses, everything. And you add it up and say, do I make that much? Or between you and your wife, you have to be worth $1 million without your house. I had people here this week and were saying, well, I don't know. Then the wife added up hers. And she said, well, my 401k is this much. His 401k was that much. And then with the annuities they had, it was $1 million.
Yeah.
But I was kind of worried about them. I'm thinking, do they have enough to do this with me?
Mm-hmm.
And then when we added up, they did have enough.
Yeah, and that's the thing. When people stop to think about it and actually go through the numbers, it can add up pretty quickly. And so I would imagine there's a lot of people who are accredited and ready to go, may not even know about it. You know, they've just been living their life, doing their thing. They forgot about a 401k over here, you know, forgot some investment or some rental property that they've got over there, you know, and they don't take all these things into consideration. Though it's worth taking the time to go add up your number, because if you can do this program, as you can see, a lot of people have made a lot of money, and there's no reason not to.
That's exactly right. And so most people, you know, 1% a month is pretty good money.
Mm-hmm.
If you know you're going to, at the end of the contract you've made, on a 24-month contract, you've made 24%.
Yeah.
That's pretty good money.
That's pretty good.
Or, you know, or if you've made 18, it doesn't matter what it is.
Yeah.
Just knowing that you're going to get that much money is real important. To know it's locked in, you're going to get that much, they're not going to ask you to take less. And you know what you're going to make is worth everything as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it really is. And once people start doing this program, you know, especially if they're making the jump over from the stock market, I'm sure that their nerves are more at peace, and they're much calmer than they were before. So, I mean, it's just a win-win situation. And, you know, you throw in $100,000 or $2,000 or $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 or whatever you can do, you throw it in there, and before you know it, you're making tons of money, you're rolling things over, and you look within a few years, and like you said, I mean, people could very well end up being like the people you were talking about earlier that made $800,000 in what, 5 years, you said?
5 years.
I mean, I know that that's just one person, but man, the numbers just add up. The conservativeness, just the whole nature of the whole thing. You know, the fact that you're only bidding on stage four cancer policies. I mean, that right there puts people so far ahead of the game, because we all know the numbers. We all know the statistics with stage four cancer, and so we know how deadly it can be. And so what happens is somebody who is diagnosed with stage four, they need a quick lump sum of money. Fastest way to get it, sell the life insurance policy, and that's where you come in. So you're helping out the policyholder who needs that cash. You're helping out people who want to invest in a more conservative type of investment and really make a lot of money and really have a retirement that they really wanted. So in order to get there, though, people have to get started. So what will you recommend people do? I know it's Easter weekend, but what do you recommend people do today?
Well, I think if they would just put their portfolio together, put whatever they want me to look at, then call next week, make an appointment, and say, I'm going to quit procrastinating. I'm going to go see Faye. Quit procrastinating. And once they do that, they come and talk to me. Then they can make an intelligent decision. Do they like us? Do they want to do it? If this is for them, then we'll sign them up. And they've got an opportunity to go home, talk to their wife, talk to their husband, come back again, mm-hmm. you know, and let us know what they want to do. And then some people make the decision that day, but a lot of them don't. A lot say, okay, I'm going to go home and think it over. And that's a good thing. We don't care.
Sure.
You know, with us, it's your decision. You've got to make the decision, not me.
Exactly, because as we say, it's your money. So, you know,
it's your money, and we want you to take care of it responsibly.
Right.
And we want you to retire early, happy, and wealthy.
Exactly. Wealthy probably being the key word here. So
I think it is a key word. Wealth, you can't do anything without it, let me tell you. You can pretend like you don't want wealth, but let me tell you something. Yeah, you can't go anywhere without money. I don't know if anybody can do that.
That'd be awful hard to do.
It'd be hard.
You may have to move to like Jupiter, and none of us want to do that.
I mean, and the trip there will cost you too much money. I mean, you can't afford to go to Jupiter.
There you go. There's another reason right there.
You're gonna have to go to some little bitty town with 500 people living there in order to survive if you don't have any money. I mean,
you get bored awfully quick.
You would. I mean, I don't know what you'd do.
All right, Faye. So one last time, what is your phone number so people can call and make an appointment to see you?
Okay, it's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. And we're at 3105 Big Spring, right next to Ivy Cottage.